Hi all, and welcome to The Apex. I'm your host, Archie, and after almost 2 years, we are finally relaunching this podcast. We have lots of exciting guests lined up, including Karun Chandok, who joins me this week. He's competed at the highest levels of motorsport, racing in Formula One, at Le Mans, and in Formula E. Karun is also a renowned commentator, analyst, writer, and historic racer. He joins us today to talk about his journey into the world of racing, life in Formula One, and what it's like to race a 250 GTO at Goodwood. Karun, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Nice to join you guys, and looking forward to chatting, I guess, for the next little bit.
Appreciate your time. Thank you. So to begin with, could you tell us a little bit about how your journey into the car world began and perhaps share some of your earliest motoring memories?
Yeah, my family were into cars and motorsport. You know, my grandfather used to race, my grandmother used to race, my dad did a lot of rallying and racing. So I traveled around the country with him, going to events all around India. And we had our own team. We ran our own, you know, garage, looking after cars and things. So I grew up very much in that environment, surrounded by cars and motor racing I guess the bug bit pretty early on. As far as I could remember, you know, I wanted to be involved in the sport, and I've been very fortunate to have now had an active career in the sport for nearly 25 years.
How do you reflect on those early racing years in Formula Maruti and Formula Asia?
They were great times, but I think, you know, it's now looking back, you realize just how far behind. In terms of the competitive level the racing in Asia is compared to Europe. You know, I think, you know, I won the Indian championship my first year of racing, and I won the Asian championship in my first year of international racing when I was 16 and 17. And you sort of think, oh, this is easy. You know, I'm on my way. It'll be fine. And then I arrive in the UK to do British F3, and it slaps you in the face just how competitive and how tough European racing is, and how high the standard of teams and drivers and level of preparation, and just how fast, frankly, the drivers are. There are very, very few bad drivers. So it forces you to raise your game. It forces you to have to dig deep and raise a level. So I think certainly even now, you know, I think Japanese racing is different. I think the level in Japan has always been pretty high, if you go back right to the 80s and the 90s. But I think even now, the rest of Asia is at a better level than it was 20 years ago, but it's still, you know, some way behind what you see in Europe.
Yeah. And I understand Bernie Eccleston played a role in getting you onto the GP2 grid. How did that come about?
Well, my father worked with Bernie on a variety of projects around TV in India and the Grand Prix in India and things like that. Bernie obviously had an interest in trying to get an Indian driver on the grid in F1 because he could see that as a market with untapped potential for F1 to reach. And so he was very instrumental in helping me around that time when I wanted to graduate to GP2 in 2007. You know, he brokered the deal with the team got me onto the grid, basically. And, even beyond that, as the path came towards F1, I was very fortunate to have him in my corner. You know, I think at the time, he was very much running the ship as an entrepreneur, basically. You know, it was a one-man show who ran the championship. It wasn't a board of directors and all that sort of stuff. It was Bernie ran the show. And so you definitely wanted him in your corner rather than the other way around. And I was fortunate to have that.
And then going from obviously GP2, transitioning into F1, I understand you did some testing for the Red Bull F1 car. How did that sort of come about? What was that like?
I was a part of the Red Bull Junior Driver Program. At the time they had a number of drivers on that program. And so I was racing in GP2 as a Red Bull Junior, and we got a call in, I think it was late 2007, to say that they wanted me to come and do some simulator work in Milton Keynes, where they were installing their first simulator. And it really wasn't very good. You know, it would just make everybody ill. And I couldn't do more than a handful of laps before getting ill in the sim. And, you know, I felt quite bad about it because, you know, this is your big opportunity and you think you've squandered it. Turns out I wasn't the only one. And, you know, the race drivers, Mark Webber and David Coulthard and even Adrian Newey, were all getting a bit sick driving it. So I felt a bit better and more reassured at that point. But yeah, I think, you know, having that first test with Red Bull was pretty special. You know, having the opportunity to drive a Formula One car is the culmination of a dream, really, for so many people. And so many young drivers who are just, you know, punching and scrambling to try and achieve that dream of driving an F1 car. You know, having that dream come true is a massive day.
And then obviously going into the 2010 season, you signed with Hispania Racing. Just how significant of a moment was that for you?
Well, it's the next dream come true, I guess, isn't it? You know, I think the first step is to actually have a go in the car. The next step is to get a seat on the grid. So, you know, it was a massive thing, you know, for me, for my country as well. We've only had two Indian drivers on the grid in F1, even now. So to have my seat on the grid was a huge, huge moment in my career. And, you know, it becomes a defining moment for everything you do afterwards, right? You know, we sit here 13 years later and most people still introduce me as a former Formula One driver. You know, that will be the case for the rest of my life. And that, so certainly getting that opportunity to drive in Grand Prix racing is a massive milestone for any driver.
And I have to ask, what was the best thing about racing in F1 and what was the most frustrating thing about racing in F1?
The best thing is obviously the cars themselves. You know, even the worst car on the grid in F1, and in Hispania was at the time, is still miles quicker and better than anything else that you drive on the planet. You know, I think, and the people you work with, I'd say, is the other thing, is you genuinely work with some of the most intelligent engineers and people on the planet trying to troubleshoot and problem solve things in a very short space of time. You know, you do a free practice session and you've got to find a solution to the car to make it better before you get to the next session or to qualifying or to the race. And, you know, so creating that bond and that working relationship with those key people around you. And it's a very intense period, a 3-day Grand Prix weekend. You know, so much gets packed into that weekend. So you've got to be able to work well together. So I enjoyed that part, you know, working with really clever people and driving the cars. I mean, the most frustrating part is obviously the competitiveness of the car. You know, not everyone can drive the teams or cars that give you the chance to fight for race victories. I didn't have that opportunity. And that's frustrating. You know, it's very hard to explain necessarily to the outside world, you know, why you are, you know, multiple seconds behind Lewis Hamilton. And that's nothing to do with you. That's to do with the car. I'm not saying I'm as good as Lewis Hamilton, but I'm saying that the gap wouldn't be multiple seconds, I imagine. So I think, you know, that's probably the most frustrating thing about racing in F1.
And then, you know, after your season in F1, you went to race at Le Mans with David Brabham and Peter Dumbrack. How did that compare and what did you make of that experience?
I really enjoyed sports car racing in general. You know, I think there's that camaraderie that you have with your teammates, which is very different to F1. I think, you know, especially when you go up the single-seater ladder from F3, F2 up to F1, you know, the whole time all you're doing is you're constantly thinking of yourself. You have to be selfish. You have to think of what is best for you, and your teammate becomes your number one competitor, and you're constantly trying to find ways to beat your teammate because that is the reference by which you're judged. And all of a sudden you move to sports car racing and it's the opposite. You have to work genuinely with your teammate as a teammate. You know, the whole word teammate it's kind of flawed, really, in Formula One, because you're not, you know, you happen to be competitors who race for the same team. Whereas in sports car racing, you genuinely, you know, you need to help the other drivers, because if their performances improve, then your performance improves, your results get better. So it's a big, big change in mindset. And it took me a little while to get my head around that, because, you know, I spent a lot of time in the first half of the year trying to be quicker than my teammates and constantly trying to do things better than them. And they weren't so bothered. They were just sort of, they were almost happy for me when I was doing well, and I couldn't understand that. And it's all a bit confusing, because you spend a lot of time, as I say, you know, by that stage, I'd spent a decade racing in this sort of single-seater, selfish mindset. So that's a big change. But, you know, Le Mans is a magical event. You know, anyone who's done it will tell you the same. I think there's a lot of stuff that happens before the race with, you know, the free practice and the parade and all that stuff. It drags on for a long time. And honestly, I'm not a big fan of a lot of that, because it just feels like you're in the middle of nowhere in France for days and days on end. But the actual 24 hours, you know, from the Saturday to the Sunday, the actual race is just amazing. You know, it really, really is something special.
And obviously, you've raced in Formula E as well. Was that, again, a completely different experience to sport car racing in F1? Because you're going, you know, there's no engine feedback in those Formula E cars. What was that like?
Yeah, it is a completely different way of going racing. It's a very cerebral category of racing, I think. You know, you need to spend a lot of your energy, because the speeds aren't high, and therefore the physical G loads are not high. You know, you're not on slick tires, so you're not actually putting in the same amount of physical effort to drive it as you would in even probably F3 or F2, frankly, let alone F1 or sports cars. But the mental load you're under to try and make sure you're hitting the energy targets and calculating the right amount of energy usage and strategizing your race to use the right energy at the right time is so, so complex. You know, you just come away from the weekends with your brain fried. You know, I wouldn't want to see or talk to anybody for a day or two afterwards, because your brain just needed to decompress all of these numbers that you had whizzing around in your head. So yeah, it was a big challenge, a different challenge. But you know, I think on the whole, looking back, I feel proud of the fact that I competed in all three of the big world championships that we have on the planet at the moment.
Yeah. And I was actually watching you race at the Goodwood Revival a couple of months back in a Ferrari 250 GTO. And I think it's fair to say that there was a little incident followed by an incredible save. What exactly happened and what was going through your mind during those moments?
Well, it was an old school engine failure, basically. You know, the engine went pop, dumped a load of oil on a hot exhaust, and there was a big flame. So I obviously felt the heat, saw the flames, and thought, okay, I need to get off the track quickly and get stopped as quickly as I can, basically. So, you know, it seized up the rear wheels, which is why the car started to spin around, but I managed to catch it and then just steered it onto the grass. And, you know, I was just hoping there'd be some marshals nearby with some extinguishers to put it out. And fortunately, there were. So, yeah, got away relatively lucky, but it's not something I want to be repeating very often.
No, absolutely. I hope it was insured, that car. And what is it that you enjoy most about historic racing? Is it something you're going to plan to do more of?
I did enjoy going to the Revival and the members meeting and Goodwood in general. You know, I think, first of all, as a family event, it's a fantastic event. I think, you know, I take my kids and my wife down there, and we just have a great time. You know, there's great cars, great people, nice to catch up with friends. It's quite a relaxed atmosphere. And for me personally, to get the opportunity to drive so many different cars and experience so many different cars is just amazing. I think we're so lucky to have a very rich history in our sport. You know, there's not many sports that you can look back on over, you know, 100 years almost and see such a technological evolution, really. And we can still experience those old cars. You know, we can still experience and get some sense of what it was like for the drivers in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, I think it's important to respect that and important to learn from that. And, you know, I enjoyed spending half an hour with Derek Bell or with Jackie Stewart, and you know, just talking about when they were racing at Goodwood back in the day, or testing back at Goodwood in the day. So, yeah, I think, you know, on the whole, it's just a nice way to try and respect and appreciate the past, the amazing history of our sport.
And after such a successful and varied racing career, I'm curious to know what you think has been your greatest race or the race that's meant the most to you.
I think the one that meant the most will always be doing your first Grand Prix. You know, I think, being on the grid in Formula One is, as I said before, you know, is an absolute dream come true. But I think doing my first Le Mans in 2012 as well, you know, those are two very, very big milestones, I would say, in any driver's career.
And is there one that you look back on thinking that was best I've ever driven?
I think, yeah, there's probably a couple. I'd say the GP2 race at Silverstone 2008. You know, we had a bit of an issue in qualifying, so I was down in 10th on the grid, but came through to finish third, you know, and it was a genuine third. I overtook people on track or, you know, or on strategy and things like that. So it was a genuine result, which I was really pleased about. I think that's probably the standout for me. But I think, you know, I'd say Le Mans 2013, I remember I had a really good stint at night, and it started to rain and I was on slicks, and I made the call to go to intermediate tires, but part of the track was bone dry, part of the track was wet, and in the dark you couldn't make out which bit was wet or which was dry. So having to you know, keep pushing on in those conditions was really hard. I think I remember I managed to unlap ourselves at that point. It was you know, a really, really good run. But it's the sort of stuff that only I would remember, because, you know, they sort of footnotes in the races, really.
And you've now become an integral part of Sky F1's broadcast team. How have you found the transition from driving to broadcasting?
I enjoy it. You know, I think there's still a lot of ingredients that stay the same. You know, you're still part of a team. You still need to work together. You still need to learn from each other. You still need to use your brain and try and communicate in a way that people at home appreciate and understand the nuances of the sport, because it is a very complex sport, arguably the most complex sport on the planet. So, you know, I enjoy that challenge of having to break down what is, you know, all these little bits and pieces that happen in the sport and try and explain that to people in a simplified way. I think that's its own challenge, you know, and I carry on working at the epicenter of the sport that I love. You know, Formula One has been a big part of my life ever since I can remember. So I feel lucky and privileged to be traveling the world to Grand Prix and spending time with teams and drivers and engineers. And, you know, I'm very happy being a small fish in what is the biggest pond in our sport. And I think it's a... And the good thing, to be honest, at Sky as well, is I get the chance to travel the world with my friends. You know, I'm Crofty and Simon and Ted and Anthony and Damon. You know, we're all genuinely friends. We all genuinely go out for dinners together. And, you know, I think it's very rare that you get the chance to travel the world with your friends working on a sport that you love. So I think we're very lucky.
And did you have your sights set on transitioning into a media type role after your racing career, or was it sort of just a natural shift?
Well, actually, I sort of was doing the media stuff in parallel, to be honest. You know, I was racing in F3. I started doing some commentary work as a source of income because, you know, I needed to earn a bit of money. And so I was working with a broadcaster out in Asia called Star Sports. And then I worked with Radio 5 Live. I did, you know, races with beIN Sports in the Middle East. I worked with Channel 4 from 2016. So I was always doing the TV stuff. It's just the ratio of driving to TV changed completely the other way around. So yeah, I think for me, I've enjoyed doing the TV stuff. You know, I think it's, you know, we just have such an interesting sport. And it's even in a year where Max Verstappen's dominating everything and people perceive things as being boring, I still think it's been a really interesting year. There's been lots going on, and there's lots to get into and lots to talk about, and lots of stories that still get me excited to go to the track every week. And I think that's why I do what I do.
Yeah, absolutely. We are coming up on time, so I'm just going to ask a few quick fire questions, if I may. As a motorsport fan, what sort of racing do you enjoy watching the most? Is it F1, touring cars, endurance racing?
It'll always be Formula One for me. You know, I think F1 is the pinnacle of the sport. I enjoy watching IndyCar. I think, the racing is good. I'm a big MotoGP fan. I try and watch, as much of the MotoGPs as I can. It's a bit tricky now with the sprint races as well. There's a lot of racing. But yeah, I mean, listen, I enjoy all forms of racing, but if I have to pick one, my first love will always be F1.
And do you have an all-time favorite racing driver?
I mean, as a kid growing up, it was Alain Prost, was my sort of childhood hero growing up. I would say I would also choose Mario Andretti and Jim Clark. As I've gotten older and you read up more and more about these drivers, you just realize how amazing and versatile they were. And frankly, that's why I enjoy going to places like Goodwood, because it sort of reminds you of what people like Mario, Mario would compete in two races on two sides of the Atlantic on the same weekend. It's madness. And Jimmy Clark would go and race three or four races on a weekend. And that is quite extraordinary, really. And they were so, so successful at what they did. So yeah, I think those are the three names that always jump in my head.
And do you have a dream three-car garage?
I would say a Ferrari F40, an Aston Martin DB5, and probably an Audi RS6 Estate, because I love an estate, so I can chuck all the kids' junk in it and take them to the park and all that sort of stuff.
That's a very, very good three-car garage. Definitely approve of that. Unfortunately, that is all we have time for. So that just leads me to thank you very much, Corinne, for your time today. That was an awesome chat. Thank you.
No problem. Happy to join you.